What on earth is going on today?
People online and their reactions to social media posts showing Drake and Kendrick fighting in fake videos.
This is the story of how the whole world got sucked into a battle of words between two giants of hip-hop culture.
It's the greatest battle in hip-hop history.
Started from the bottom.
A Drake music video, then one from Kendrick.
Say I never struggled, wasn't hungry, yeah, I doubt it, nigga.
They couldn't be more different. One's a former child actor, an unstoppable hit machine.
In hip-hop, no artist has more hits than Drake.
The other's a boy from the hood, hailed as a prophet for his people.
He's arguably the most important artist of our generation because he's not chasing hits and he's fearless.
Their epic beef comes at a time when public confrontations were everywhere. Like this highly charged exchange between presidential rivals.
They're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats.
Americans in general can be chauvinistic about the American experience.
With a conflict that pitched art and culture against money and power.
I see artistry versus riches and fame.
On the front line of the culture wars.
We can't look at America and not factor in race.
And asked us all to choose sides.
Who do you think would win?
Gotta go with Kendrick.
In a fight for global domination.
If it's really fuck everybody, then it needs to be fuck everybody.
Public enemies. Kendrick versus Drake.
Take off the cloud chase, take off the Wi-Fi, take off the money phone.
A Kendrick video, then Drake.
Man, y'all don't get it, do you? Type of money, everybody acting like they knew you. Go uptown, New York City. Spanish girls love me like a mama daughter.
Kendrick Lamar and Drake are massive global stars. Both are hip-hop icons. But the gulf between them is huge. Their differences have exhilarated fans for years. But in a culture where there can only be one king, the clash between them was inevitable. And it all started more than a decade ago.
Online opinions.
To understand where their epic beef came from, we need to go back to their origin stories and the two very different paths that would one day lead them to collide so dramatically.
A sign reads, "Welcome to Los Angeles, California."
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Archive film of young black men, then a family photo.
Born in Los Angeles in 1987, Kendrick Lamar grew up in Compton, the black neighborhood that put West Coast rap literally on the map.
Straight out of Compton, crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube, from the gang called Niggas with Attitudes.
A full 25 years before BLM put police brutality at the top of the agenda, Kendrick was already in the thick of it.
In 1992, when Kendrick was 5 years old, you have these tensions in Los Angeles between black people, white people, black people, and law enforcement.
The beating of Rodney King, Marcus J. Moore.
You have this sort of powder keg of black people just deciding they're not gonna take it anymore. The rage just sort of boiled over.
Riots.
And it leads to rebellion, which also leads to looting. And Kendrick sees the elders essentially like taking things for free. And that, you know, kind of shows them like, okay, wait up. I don't fully process what's going on here, but I know enough to know that what's happening isn't right. And that gives him a heightened sense of awareness even at 5 years old.
visions of Martin Luther staring at me. Malcolm X put a hex on my future, someone catch me. I'm falling victim to a revolutionary song, the Serengeti's clone. Back to put you backstabbers back on your spinal bone. You slit your disc when I slit you my disc, you wanted to diss.
In 1999, at the age of 12, Kendrick met the person who first nurtured his gift for poetry.
I started teaching poetry as a way to communicate. Started teaching poetry as a way to get your anger and your frustrations out on the paper instead of coming to school with your fist balled up because you're ready to fight. Kendrick was already a pretty good writer. One thing that I felt I had to work with him on was not so much his academics, was his confidence. That was the one thing for him, to work on his confidence and say, hey, you're a smart kid, but you have to get up there and be able to talk. You have to get up there and say it. You know, you have to get up there and read it. No, I'm telling you that it's good. You just have to believe it. But we do need to work on your vocabulary.
So I walked out the office. The first thing I see is just a huge group of kids in a circle jumping up and down and moving around. So I ran all the way down here. I'm trying to get through to see who was fighting, what was going on. Freaked me out because I'm getting close. I hear oohs and ahs. You know, when you hear oohs and ahs and kids jumping around, that ain't good. So I was like, what's going on? They were like,
date unknown, young Kendrick rapping.
You want it? They can serve you like a butler.
Never forget that moment to see them actually battle rapping. Oh, thank God, you know, thank God.
It's not easy to live in Compton, especially when you're gang affiliated. You are always in survival mode. So they knew that Kendrick was not that kind of a person. And when they realized that he had a gift, they did what a great friend would do. You don't need to do what I'm over here doing. You need to be over there in that studio writing, getting better, doing what you're supposed to do. They knew he was a great student. So you need to keep doing that. Because out here in these streets, I don't believe that Kendrick was made for the streets like that. He just grew up in the streets.
Regis Singh, Kendrick's English teacher.
While Kendrick was growing up deep in the hood life of Black America, Drake wasn't. Less than a year older than Kendrick, Drake was raised in the leafy Toronto suburbs, where he was known to his friends David and Ben by his real name, Aubrey.
There's Aubrey there.
All right, time to take a stroll down memory lane. Let's break out the old bar mitzvah DVD. See if it still works.
This should be a lot of fun. Wow, pretty crazy to see everybody, eh?
Yeah. Right,
here we go, there's Aubrey. Come on, son.
Still always a lover.
Always,
still
yeah.
Is.
And the confidence with the braces and
the glasses.
And the glasses.
Deadly combination. Of the signs were all there that he was going to become like a huge star.
What's up, Benny boy? Yeah. Have a good one. Muzzle top.
There we go. Yeah, there's Aubrey with the muzzle top.
Yeah, he was dropping those muzzle top bombs even back then.
Yeah. So this is another staple back then, right? TLC, No Scrubs.
Yeah, so what would happen is, like, the girls would sing No Scrubs.
Yeah, you remember all the boys were chanting No Pigeons, right?
He's, like, crushing it.
Yeah, Aubrey's crushing this right now. It's probably his first rap battle you just saw right there.
Yeah, that was definitely his first rap battle against those girls.
With a Jewish-Canadian mum and a Black American dad, Drake's Toronto childhood was influenced by two very different identities.
Peter Rosenberg, hip-hop radio host, Hot 97 NYC.
Being a Jewish person myself, when I found out that this rap artist who was like legit and credible and good and popular had a Jewish mom and was like bar mitzvahed, was like aware of his Jewish heritage, that was very exciting to me. I've had a lot of people send my interview with him to me. I get tagged in it a lot. And it's like Drake being like, yeah, I'm Jewish. I was bar mitzvahed.
I went to a predominantly Jewish school growing up. I definitely had a bar mitzvah in an Italian restaurant, mind you.
And people use that clip to impugn him. there are a lot of people who have some Jewish heritage, but they're not always so open about it. And Drake was open about it.
But when Drake's parents divorced, his father moved back to the States.
When he spent time with his dad or go down to Memphis, like, he was Drake. And then when he come home to Forest Hill and he was with his mom, he was Aubrey. When he comes back from Memphis, he's like rapping. He's speaking patois. And then like I try and speak patois and he's like, no, you can't speak patois because like you're white. And I'm like, okay.
In 2001, when he was just 15, a very young looking Drake first appeared in hit Canadian teen drama, Degrassi.
Sean Cameron. Jimmy Brooks. Thought me and you were cool, man.
There is no me and you.
Linda Schuyler.
As you can see, we've got some of the bits and pieces of awards over the years. That was an Emmy that we're very proud of. When I first met Aubrey Graham, he was 14 years old. He was at that stage of life where he had lots of energy. He was a little bit awkward. He didn't have that beautiful fluid movement to him that he now has, but there was energy and there was charisma. You just knew you were meeting somebody who just felt like a really good person.
For 8 years, Canadian teenagers followed the ups and downs of Drake's character, Jimmy Brooks.
How you all know?
Good. You set the whole thing up.
Wait, come on, I defended you.
The student pulls a gun on Drake's character.
You made me do this.
He shoots him.
Oh my God. It was really important that we had a character that would become a fan favorite. And that's what Aubrey did.
There are a lot of different dichotomies when it comes to Kendrick and Drake, but one that cannot be overstated is the fact that Kendrick was nobody rapping. By the time Drake got serious about the rapping, he was already somebody. Like, that's a vastly different way to enter the game.
As a teen star, Drake's appeal as a personality, not just as an actor, was growing, as seen in this behind-the-scenes promo clip for Degrassi.
That's my grandson!
What's up, everybody? You're chilling with me, Aubrey Graham.
As they started out in the game, the suburban teen star and the boy from the hood had still never met. But within 5 years, their rivalry would be sealed.
Public Enemies, Kendrick versus Drake. Public Enemies, Kendrick versus Drake, a Kendrick video.
From the hub city, here the Compton court building, caught a murder when his homie died, just caught feeling.
As a teenager in the early 2000s, Kendrick Lamar was still finding his voice as a rapper.
As much as we love Kendrick, we also know that his early stuff was not that great.
Known as K-Dot, Kendrick was just another mixtape rapper.
K-Dot wanted to get famous sounding like other rappers. Wants to sound like Jay-Z, hit you with all the metaphors and similes like Lil Wayne, and didn't really have an identity, honestly. Like, he just kind of sounded like everybody else.
But I'm still feeling notorious, word to Biggie's name, capital K dot, revolutionary, black stroke.
And then he decided he wanted to tell his own story. That's when he becomes Kendrick Lamar.
Rapping under his real name represented the transition from street rapper to artist, as Kendrick himself explained in this early interview.
People heard K dot, they was like, yo, the kid is dope, he can rap, but who is he? You know what I mean? That went on for years. You're just another cat in the streets that can rap good, right? So I was like, you know what? I want people to know who I am as a person and what I represent. So I woke up one morning, I said, the best way to start it off is give me my name change, my real name, something my mother been calling me for years.
Around the same time in Toronto, Drake was ready to swap his TV career for a new challenge.
They want to have these videos like T.I.P. and B.I.G. and famous singers want to be Ciara Horvath and D.I.B. and somebody that they could call their own for that, they D.I.G.
K. Canadian producer Beat Child was looking for new artists to work with when Drake made the move into music.
So when I met him, he was already acting in Degrassi. We'd go to drive-thru and the girls at the drive-thru would freak out. And I'd look over, I'm like, who is this kid? Right? He doesn't have a song out yet. He expressed that he wants to be number one. He wants to be famous. To me, it was kind of confusing. I'm like, man, you're already famous. You want more? He's really ambitious, really determined, really hungry.
For a couple of years, Beat Child and Drake worked together making music. Like this avant-garde sounding left field hip-hop soul track. The partnership worked creatively, but Drake had bigger ambitions than the small pond of Toronto rap could offer.
There was a point in time where he wanted to get some features on his next project, and you know, he told me he wanted Lil Wayne, and I was just like, wow, Lil Wayne, right? I was like impressed, you know? And I think it was like a matter of months, and he was in Atlanta? He was gone. You!
Soldier boy, tell. At that time, the exciting hip-hop action was in the raucous new sound coming out of the American South. And the king of Southern rap was New Orleans' Lil Wayne. A millionaire, I'm a young money millionaire,
tougher than Nigerian hair, my criteria compared to your career. So Lil Wayne at this point in time, 2008, 2009, a lot of people were giving him the title the greatest rapper alive. There couldn't have been a bigger artist for him to attach himself to at that point in time in terms of hip-hop.
Del Cowie, Toronto hip-hop journalist.
Lil Wayne was dominating the market, putting out so much material. His mixtapes were everywhere, his freestyles were everywhere, his features were everywhere. And so for him to take time out of being, you know, the dominant rapper to pay attention to a rapper from Toronto, in this case, meant a lot.
The pair in a video.
They signed Drake into Cash Money. We were the UK releasing label for all of Drake's records, all of Cash Money's records. The platform that Lil Wayne gave him probably gave him validation coming from Canada, which wasn't known for throwing up hip-hop artists that could flourish in America.
Being black and Canadian was something of a glitch embedded at the heart of the Drake brand. As Drake himself would acknowledge in this self-deprecating Saturday Night Live skit from 2016.
This is Black Jeopardy.
I'm your host, Donnell Hayes, and our contestants today are Jared.
Yeah, it's actually really good to be here, dog. You know, like, I'm excited, dog.
Del's watching.
Say, what's going on with your accent there, Jared?
Oh, me? Well, I'm actually Canadian.
Wait, you're a black Canadian?
Obviously, dog. I mean, like, yo, there's thousands of us. I'm sure you've met a few of us before.
No.
Well, no, I mean, there are, I mean, I think that the awareness is growing, but if you were to ask most people, the black Canadians that they know, their list would probably begin and end with Drake.
No good rap comes from Canada, okay?
Oh. What about Drake, dog?
The idea that people think that Canada or Toronto is somehow less than in any way than the United States of America is bizarre. Americans in general can be chauvinistic about the American experience. And I think that can sometimes carry over into black people about the black experience. Like somehow the black American experience is the most authentic and the most deep and the most correct. And that is simply untrue.
Drake comes from Toronto. So you have to build your own world to get that kind of validation that Kendrick had just growing up in Compton.
Snoop Dogg.
That validation soon came to Kendrick from one of the biggest names in hip-hop. At just 24, the torch of West Coast rap was passed to Kendrick Lamar by Snoop Dogg himself.
You can tell that that moment was really big for Kendrick because he starts weeping, like right in the middle of it. That was vitally important for Kendrick because him getting passed the torch by one of his idols is giving validation to this dude who's just getting started.
The tearful Kendrick on stage. Gliding over a suburb, Il Camille, artist and friend of Kendrick, she's listening through headphones.
Kendrick's friend and fellow Compton rapper Il Camille featured on his 2012 breakthrough album, Good Kid, Mad City.
Good Kid, Mad City gave us a chance to see just how much of an intricate storyteller he really is. Just promise me you tell the story when you make it big. And if I die before your album drop, I hope. chills every time. Sometimes topics about blackness and family and death, sometimes those topics sit a little heavy, and industry folks will tell you, like, gotta keep it light. But Kendrick has a weird, unique skill of giving you what you need and what you want at the same time.
Good Kid, Mad City was a game changer for Kendrick. With producers such as Pharrell, captured here in this behind-the-scenes video, it brought him to the attention of a much wider audience. And it had a confidence and originality that reset the template of what was possible in hip-hop. Straight bullets,
AK bullets. I love all that jazz shit that y'all have in your music. That's the shit, man.
Yeah, he one of the next out of Compton. He's one of the next, to me, in America, period. And he's one of the next. It's nice.
Pharrell Williams.
Good Kid, Mad City was a painting done by an artist through a lens of a young man who had friends who were gang affiliated.
Regis Sings.
Who's probably gonna sin again? Lord, forgive me.
You got a picture of what it's like on a day-to-day basis to live in Compton as a teenager.
A white coffin sliding into a hearse, then the mourners partying in a funeral car.
I've lost 32 students. I've been to 19 funerals. That's not good because I look at them like my own child.
Black youths on bikes.
By 2012, Kendrick and Drake were both big names. As hugely different as they were, their paths were about to cross for the first time when Drake asked Kendrick to support him on his Club Paradise tour.
How did that happen?
I sat down with Drake in Toronto a while back when I did my first show out there. He called me up and we had a few drinks and, you know, he always said he was, you know, appreciative of my music. I've always been a fan of his music.
I want to let you know, I've been on tour with this guy. This is like actually one of my real friends.
When Drake brought Kendrick out on tour, that was a really big deal. Like, that was a big look for Kendrick. Because make no mistake about it, Drake was way out ahead of Kendrick in terms of popularity. Like, Kendrick was becoming a thing on the underground. And Drake has always been a master of knowing what's about to blow next and standing next to it.
Drake even took the opportunity to endorse Good Kid, Mad City, as captured in this footage at the time.
And I'm gonna let you know that on October 22nd, right, he's got an incredible album coming out and we got a joint on there that's so fucking hard, I swear.
Drake may have thought he was lending a friendly hand to an up-and-coming rapper. But in August 2013, Kendrick launched a surprise attack on Drake and all of the current top rappers with a guest feature on a track by Detroit's Big Sean.
I'm usually homeboys with the same niggas I'm rhyming with, but this is hip-hop and them niggas should know what time it is. And that goes for A$AP Rocky, Drake,
Big Sean, J Electron, Tyler McMillan. I got love for you all, but I'm trying to murder you niggas. Trying to make sure your core fans never heard of you niggas.
Man, I haven't seen a hip hop song stir up this much excitement in years, really.
The Control Verse lobbed a live grenade into the tinderbox of hip hop's hyperinflated super egos.
I remember texting with him the night that his Control Verse came out. He was aware of what was going on. That was the first time I realized how intentional Kendrick was. Like, he definitely knew what the Control Verse was gonna do. And then he just kind of sat back like a mad scientist and watched it.
On a stage.
Interviewed by hip-hop journalist Elliot Wilson, Drake laughed off the challenge from hip-hop's new Young Pretender.
People like moments, you know, like that verse was
a moment to talk about. Are you listening to it now?
No. I almost wish he had come in there on that shit
because I kind of lost like a little respect for the sentiment of the verse. If it's really fuck everybody, then it needs to be fuck everybody. It just can't be halfway for the sake of the people.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, for real, that's just how I feel.
It established them as rivals, even at the time when Drake didn't want to accept that they were rivals. Kendrick drew his line in the sand and says, I'm a rival to you, and I'm gonna be bigger than you or as big as you, and he proved it. And Drake says he has to prove it, and he did prove it.
Drake shouldn't have been so shocked by the unexpected diss. Lyrically attacking your rivals is a tradition that goes way back to the very origins of hip hop.
Well, you have to understand, there is nothing in culture like a rap battle.
Tupac and Biggie.
There is nothing, there is no comp in any genre like two popular artists who are not competing with each other for record sales or ink in the newspaper. I'm talking about literally heads up competition. That is only a hip hop thing. There was never a time when Mick Jagger and John Lennon were like, all right, let's go heads up, see who's better.
But the decades-long history of beef in hip-hop has sometimes gone to some very dark places.
Danielle Smith.
The only battle that speaks to my heart and soul is the battle between Tupac Shakur and Biggie Smalls. It was a real-life battle. It ended with two people dead. And I can't lie, it's always going to scare me a little bit when rappers are battling.
The first decade of the new millennium was a time when everything was changing. New tech platforms were disrupting the way all industries worked. And Drake and Kendrick were coming of age as artists when the music industry was facing an existential threat.
Apple have launched the UK version of their online music store, iTunes.
I remember a guy named Daniel Ek coming into the building. He was doing the rounds of all the record companies and meeting all the record companies to tell them of this new platform called Spotify. He left the building and I was like, Spotify? Drake was right on the cusp of when streaming was taking hold. He understood how to work the algorithm.
In the new streaming era, Drake wasn't just changing the culture of hip-hop. He was changing the business.
You underestimated greatly. Most number ones ever, how long did it really take me? The part I love most is they need me more than they hate me, so they never take shots, I got everybody on safety.
Numbers obviously matter to him. He wants to always be at the top of the game. And the way you stay at the top of the game is to keep releasing. The algorithm can reset itself if you leave it too long. So Drake doesn't leave it too long. He doesn't leave a gap for the world to start resetting. He doesn't let anybody reset. He just goes again.
Drake in the studio.
While Drake was gaming the system to stay at the top of the emerging new digital entertainment industry, Kendrick was heading in a different direction.
In the video, Kendrick falls backwards through a wall.
Kendrick's 2015 album To Pimp a Butterfly mixed feel-good bangers with clever ideas and complex wordplay, but it also addressed a darker reality of modern America.
Get out.
Okay. All right. Well, don't touch me.
Get out of the car.
It was a very precarious time in America. It was 2015, and a few years before, a young teenager named Trayvon Martin was killed in Florida. And you have Eric Garner, who gets choked out by police in New York. Sandra Bland, who gets killed. So it felt like every other day, you had to wonder who was next or what the hashtag was gonna be.
And then nothing was changing. But when Kendrick Lamar came through with All Right, it let you believe that maybe it actually would be.
I remember you was conflicted, misusing your influence. Sometimes I did the same, abusing my power full of resentment.
All Right became the anthem of a new movement, Black Lives Matter.
Nazareth, I'm fucked up, homie, you fucked up, but if God got us, then we gon' be all right, right,
nigga, we gon' be all right.
It wasn't until I heard it at a protest that I realized that the song was bigger than it initially was supposed to be. There was a rally in particular in Cleveland where somebody from the crowd started chanting, we gonna be all right. And that becomes a chant. We gonna be all right. And then other protests start picking up on that. One person used it, somebody else used it. Then it just became a rallying cry for a lot of people.
At a protest,
our supposed leaders left us a little bit high and dry. Kendrick had an answer for us. And I'm gonna be honest, we needed it.
A Howard University banner reads, Division of Student Affairs.
He says it himself, he makes music that electrifies people, and it made everybody understand what that felt like. And to be able to do that, such a massive moment in history, that is the soundtrack of that for the rest of time.
In the video, a white police sheriff fires his finger gun and shoots Kendrick down from a high street light. Kendrick falls to the ground. A Drake video.
You used to call me on my...
While Kendrick was becoming the voice of protest and civil rights in America, Drake was going viral for very different reasons.
You used to call me on my cell phone.
Hotline Bling was a sensation, putting Drake up there with the most streamed artists in the world. The iconic video was parodied everywhere, including, memorably, by a reality TV star and unlikely new presidential candidate called Donald Trump.
You used to call me on the cell phone.
Some people dance like this.
Call me on the cell phone.
I swear it's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's very dubious to be trying to, you know, tap into this. It basically just shows Hotline Bling had become such a phenomenon that if you want votes, it's not the worst idea probably to tap into the biggest social media phenomenon that was happening at the time.
I might declare it a holiday as soon as Bucky get back with the world together.
I think in hindsight, it's funny. You have All Right, which is arguably one of the greatest protest songs ever. But then you also have Hotline Bling. I'm Drake, I'm gonna go over here and chase some bread. I'm Kendrick, I'm gonna go over here and chase my artistry. And you start to see the chasm getting wider and wider.
Drake dancing in the video, then a live show.
In 2016, with his fame in the US well established, Drake began to dabble in music scenes elsewhere, with a particular focus on the grime, drill, and UK rap scene.
A rainy London.
I don't have time for the waste, man, jokes. Personal thing if I'm getting up close. Loyal to Oaks, I've taken a old Versace hotel and I'm taking the robes.
It led to some accusing him of cultural appropriation.
I think it's part of Drake's tactic of like,
I need to go and get co-signed. It's like you've come over here and there's things that you want, but you can't like measure the things you want. It's stylistic. It's like it's being seen around a certain type of person.
Drake has been accused of being someone who takes from different scenes and is seen as a culture vulture of some kind.
Drake claimed Toronto, he claimed Memphis, he claimed Houston, yeah. He claimed Vegas, Atlanta.
Miami,
he's
from
that.
Everywhere.
So yeah, I don't view him as any kind of vulture to the things. I think that he's inspired by these different forces. He taps in, he's empowered others from that do it authentically, and it's sort of made built these relationships throughout his career.
Toronto's a melting pot. It's super diverse over there. His dad is literally, his dad is a musician from Memphis. Yeah. It don't get more ethnic than that.
Drake pushed back on the accusations himself in this 2019 interview with Elliot Wilson.
The definition of appropriating a culture is not supporting that culture, right. Doing songs with people who are deeply rooted in that culture, giving opportunity to people who are in that culture. Yeah. That's not appropriating. Appropriating is taking it for your own personal gain and denying that it was ever inspired from this. I'm not only paying all due respects verbally, yeah. But like I make a point to give
look.
Yeah. give opportunity to people that I respect.
There isn't another global artist that has lent their voice so much to a culture that has been undermined for what gain at that point. It wasn't the biggest thing in the world. He didn't have to do it. You can never deny the importance of that.
Tiffany Calver, One Extra. Elliot Wilson, Editor-in-Chief, XXL, 1999 to 2008.
No matter what success Drake has, Drake is still battling against this idea of what his cultural currency looks like. I'm here to say, I believe he's hip hop. I believe he's true to the culture. He may not be the stereotypical thing that you look at to say, this is what the hip hop greatest artist looks like, but Drake is up there with that. And I think I wanted this next chapter of his career be about him securing his legacy in hip hop.
But the next chapter would instead be the biggest beef in the history of hip hop.
Public Enemies, Kendrick versus Drake. Public Enemies, Kendrick versus Drake.
By 2016, Kendrick Lamar was being feted as the most important name in hip-hop from the most unexpected quarters.
Rolling Stone magazine called our next guest the greatest rapper of his generation.
Taylor Swift lip-syncing then-President Obama.
If Drake and Kendrick Lamar got in a rap battle, who do you think would win?
Got to go with Kendrick. I'm just saying. I think Drake is an outstanding entertainer, but Kendrick, his lyrics, his last album was outstanding.
Kendrick's album Damn confirmed his position as a cultural giant.
Mr. Lamar has become a multi-platinum, Billboard chart-topping, two-time Grammy award-winning musician.
In 2018, Kendrick became the first hip-hop artist ever to receive an extraordinarily prestigious accolade.
The Pulitzer Prize awarded to Damn by Kendrick Lamar, a virtuosic song collection unified by its vernacular authenticity.
While the two artists continued their separate meteoric rises, the animosity sparked by the control verse a whole decade earlier lay between them. Until the unsettled score was reignited.
A chess game in a video.
In a guest verse on Drake's first-person shooter, rapper J. Cole referred to himself, Drake and Kendrick as the Big Three. Kendrick came back hard.
Motherfuck the Big Three, nigga, it's just Big Me, nigga, boom!
Feeling the heat, J. Cole bowed out gracefully.
Boy, I must have had 1,000 missed calls. Oh my fucking God. Text flooded. I couldn't even answer my shit. Nigga, it's wartime. Boom, boom, right? The world wanna see blood.
The proxy war was over. Kendrick versus Drake was on. Drake opened fire with push-ups, laughing at Kendrick's pop credentials.
Then we need a verse for the Swifties. Top say drop, you better drop and give them 50.
Hey, yo, the mockery is mad.
Kendrick came back with a barrage of insults on Euphoria.
I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk. I hate the way that you dress.
Tell him how you really feel.
Then in one day that has gone down in entertainment history, the lyrical exchange went fully nuclear.
Hey, somebody let me know what 616 in LA mean.
616 is
Tupac's birthday.
The internet broke as the world rushed to their screens to decode the lyrics of 616 in LA. Less than 5 hours later, Drake retaliated with Family Matters, daring Kendrick to come back at him.
That's when I was about to go to sleep.
Nigga, I said it, I know that you mad. I've emptied the clip over friendlier jabs. You mentioned my seed, now deal with his dad. I gotta go bad, I gotta go bad.
And within the hour, Kendrick dropped Meet the Grahams, taking the war to new levels.
Nah, bro, the disrespect is at an all-time high. Is at an all-time high.
But the real battle was still to come when Kendrick landed what some called the knockout blow.
In the Not Like Us video, a black woman gets up from a chair, then dances.
Not Like Us turned the diss levels up to 11, with Kendrick making outrageous allegations about Drake.
Trying to strike a chord and it's probably A minor.
Reactions from various people online.
Another fucking massacre. Oh shit, Kendrick!
Not Like Us took the beef off social media and into the mainstream, as major news channels weighed in with relish.
We have never seen the frequency of diss tracks.
But this goes back 10 years.
And we really mean back to back.
The battle cry of Not Like Us even gave Kendrick the platform to bring LA's warring gangs together against the perceived common enemy of Canadian pop.
A large crowd.
This turned this conflict into a unification, into empowerment. And I think he brilliantly did that. He did that on that song, and he did that with the pop-out show, with the big grand finale of everybody on that stage.
And for all of us to be on the stage, together, unity from each side of motherfucking LA, Crips, Bloods, Power Rules, this shit is special, man.
When Kendrick Lamar says, not like us, he means Drake is not authentic like us. He's not cut from the same cloth. He is an actor, and the us and the not like us are people like Kendrick who came up the hard way.
By staking Black America's claim to be the sole custodians of hip-hop, Kendrick boxed Drake into a corner.
Drake had some brutal missteps in the battle. Poorly calculated missteps. The playing with racial stuff when everyone knows you're half white and Jewish and you're not American, so you don't fundamentally understand the Black American experience, which is a unique experience. Racism is everywhere and it exists differently everywhere. But this racism that we have here, this American Jim Crow, chattel slavery, horrifying history of racism that we have is unique and it creates its own conversation. And Drake played around in that without knowing what he was stepping into.
It's not just Black Americans. It's not just Black people from the West Coast. It's all of us. Black culture really does move global culture.
In an era of identity politics, the battle royale between these two titans asked all of us to choose sides in a culture war between community on one hand and profit on the other.
Kendrick, lyrically, stands on a hill. He's blacker than black. He's about his people. And you can see what he cares about. And you can see what Drake cares about. And they care about two separate things.
And you're seeing now this sort of tidal wave against Drake because people are now figuring out, what a lot of us have known for 15 years, that he wasn't validated by the people who were actually in the culture. He's validated by record label executives. He's validated by people sitting in offices who just look at spreadsheets.
Drake is like an athlete. I think he sees everything as competition and not wanting to be second best. That's why he is one of the biggest artists in the world.
On stage.
There's almost nobody that's better for business. He moves the needle. He is a superstar. But of course, I also understand art. Everybody doesn't have to have a diamond album to be important to rap or to be important to culture, period.
Hip-hop used to exist at the margins. But now, hip-hop is the entertainment industry. Big enough for this to be the first beef that can have two winners.
I feel like this moment will be remembered as yet another coronation for Kendrick Lamar. He's arguably the most important artist of our generation. He's not chasing hits, and he's fearless.
I think Drake has played this role really, really well, and I think it will likely be the role that he does play for his entire life.
There's this idea that Black people are this, like, monolithic group of people that can only be in or about a certain thing at a time. We are a complex group. We want to be all right. We also want our phone to bling. Like, both of those things can exist at the same time and be true. And that's what makes artists like Kendrick and like Drake so great, is that they are tapped in and they can, on their best days, speak to and for us.